And my crew consisted of male and female, you know. Male and female.
What was the proportion? Do you recall?
No, I don't recall. Mm-hmm. But male and female. Mm-hmm. And so they decided, I said, now, you know, we used to go to work at 7 o'clock in the morning. And the grievance hearings didn't start until around 10. And they would maybe go till 6 o'clock at night. So what I would do in order to prove to them that I could be a lead man and still take care of my union activity, I would go in the morning. And I got away with it for quite a while. I wouldn't even punch in. But I would come in there at my desk, you know, and I'd get all the paper and my crew would be there, and I'd sign them. I'd assign them to the job. And I would tell them now, and so each lead man has a stamp, a quality control stamp. And whenever you have a job that's ready to sell to an inspector, you get your paper and fill it out, and it'll stamp on there, see? Well, at first I didn't give anybody my stamp. I would just assign the work, and it was such that I could, because it was sub-assembly. I wasn't holding up the line or anything. Mm-hmm. And I would assign it, and the kids would get everything all done. The next morning when I'd come in, I'd put everything up on the board to sell, see? So, and the crew, man, they were so great, you know. They were so great. If they needed anything, if they could possibly wait till next day, but they'd make a little list. So when I'd come in the morning, they had it all ready for me. You know, they'd tell me, now, Betty, we need this for today, and this is not, we had trouble with this over here. And they were very, very cooperative.
Did they do it individually, or did someone
become someone? Oh, no, individually. No, not yet, mm-hmm. Okay? So the people all did that, and the company, you know, they couldn't do very much about it because, you know, no violation of anything. They were getting the work out. They were getting the work out, you know. So then, eventually what I did, I got one of the fellows in there that I knew that I could really trust, and it wasn't a fink. And I let him have my stamp. So if anything happened during the day where he was really, where anybody was really stunned, he put my stamp on. And the inspectors were even cooperating with me. Oh, they were great. They were really super. And my immediate boss, he didn't care as long as I got the work out. It was just top management that let get me off their backs and mm-hmm. industrial relations. Not the company, because we used to win prizes, performance prizes, and quality control. My crew, you bet, no problem. Mm-hmm. Really that way, see. So anyway, eventually when the plant built up, eventually then what they did, they made a temporary lead to take my place. So then I didn't have to, you know, come in the morning. In fact, they were really checking on me. They said, you know, that's against the law. You can't do that. You can't. You're working long hours. You're not getting paid for it. And we just can't let you do it, Betty. And I said, well, you know. So eventually what they did, they put a lead in my place so that I didn't have to worry about it because I was out so much because even before I go into grievances, I get a call to go out, you know, from a chief steward or somebody, and I have to go out on the call, see?
Now, how was that temporary lead?
Now, what they would do, first what they did, first in the terms of the contract, what they did, they would take the senior person in that crew, mm-hmm. and that was on a temporary basis, okay? Mm-hmm. And so when they found out that worked pretty good, but they could see that I was going to be out full time, you know, I was constantly, and I was on legal business, too. Mm-hmm. They didn't quarrel about that. Then what they did, they took the next senior person that was in line for lead, and they put that person over there. That's the way it was.
Mm-hmm. So it was someone from another department then?
The senior person, yes. Yeah. It just so happened that person in my crew was not senior, not next in line, mm-hmm. you know.
Now, how did that affect your crew?
No problem at all. They were just happy that I could continue being the bargaining committee then. Mm-hmm.
Now, with the it sounds almost as if the entire crew was very strongly pro-union.
Oh, yes, they were. Mm-hmm. They were.
Because even once the union was in and strong, wasn't there still some holdouts in the plant?
Oh, yes, there were. But you see, the people in my crew, we used to talk about the grievances that go on and the cases we'd get and the ones we'd win and how the inequities, you know, and the things the company would try to pull. And if we didn't have a union, why, we mm-hmm. wouldn't even have any process. And so they were... Man, they were all for it. They were mm-hmm. gung-ho. Mm-hmm. They really were. And like I said, I didn't have any trouble with the management either. In fact, one of the supervisors, not at that time, but there was one of our supervisors that had been on the executive board. And he was a good union man, really a good union man, but he was giving this offer for assistant foreman of the shop. He liked the people and everything else. And so whenever, you know, we didn't have any trouble out there in that area because the guy was actually pro-union, and we never had any grievances in there because the guy didn't violate the contract. And the only time we ever have agreements is if there's a difference of opinion or interpretation, something like that. But it was a real good situation, you know.
Now, what do you recall about the election to the bargaining committee? How did all that
Boy, that's when I really got into the really hairy politics of the local union. And I mean to tell you, that was a real fight. I mean, that's when I found out how rough, you know, politics can be. And I couldn't understand why they were fighting so hard, or why, you know, they would do the things that they would do in order to get elected to the bargaining committee. I couldn't understand that, because there wasn't any money involved. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any money. You weren't getting paid any extra money.
How large at that point was the bargaining committee?
I think we had 7 on the committee.
So it was, and would most of the people be people who come from chief stewardship? Who would run normally for the bargaining committee?
Well, normally it would be those that come up through the ranks, mm-hmm. you know. Normally it would be that way.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the chief stewards normally. Mm-hmm. So every normally you'd see a steward that would run, you know, but normally it would be people that, you know, like the stewards that, you know, if they had people that hired in, they had previous union
mm-hmm.
experience,
mm-hmm.
but not UAW, you know.
But you'd usually have someone from there. You wouldn't have someone who had no union experience at all.
That's right.
Who would run.
That's right.
Now, how did you decide to run, and what sort of problems was there in the election?
Well, I decided to run because the same reason I told you that I ran for shop steward, and I decided to go up the ladder,
mm-hmm.
you know. That's how why I decided to run. And I also found that to be on the bargaining committee, they're the ones that signed the agreements. The seniority committee is the one that did the investigating, and they could recommend the agreements be signed, but they did not sign agreements, okay? And that's where you would fight your grievances, too. You have a chance to, once the grievance is filed, to fight the grievance and process and win it, you say. That's why I ran for that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I felt that there was so much to gain, you know, so many things that we didn't have that I was interested in. One of the reasons why I joined, you know, I became an organizer, I felt we should have medical plan, pension plan, all that sort of thing. And when I first became on the budget, we didn't have those things. And so I felt that if I was in a position on a committee where I would have a voice as to what we should be pushing for,
mm-hmm.
you know, as far as a voice in the shop, that's why I should run.
Mm-hmm.
And so being a woman, of course, there had never been a woman on the bargaining committee ever. Executive board, yes, but not the bargaining committee. So I had a lot of opposition. I had a lot of opposition from the pros, the politicians, the old pros. But I had so much support from the shop, the people that I had represented.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that elected me, see? They're the ones that elected me.
What type of opposition take?
Well, the type of opposition that they would take, you know, they always seem to get money somewhere. I don't know where the hell they got the money from, because, you know, to pay for expensive slates and to take people out and buy them drinks and stuff like that, you know? And I never had anything like that. In fact, you know, I would just chip in my share of $5 for the slates or whatever, and I guess as many times it would be kind of hard for me to do that. But it's just that, like I said, the level of politics, because I had never been involved in politics before ever, and let alone labor politics, you know. And take them out for a few drinks, take them out for dinner, and I'll promise them that if the guy wanted a job over here and he sure wanted it over there, you know, why, you just get me elected and we'll talk about it. See, where I wouldn't do that. No way, you know. I figured, you know, if I couldn't get elected on my record, you know, or what I believe
mm-hmm.
in, and
mm-hmm.
then I shouldn't be there. And it was hard. It's hard. It was really hard. But I happened to be, you know, a steward from the grassroots, you know, see, and when we started to build up, and we had that one little department, and we finally built up in the ramp and everything else, so that I knew the people pretty well, and I had touched so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
There were some of these pros that came in that had been there, like, you know, as long as I had. They might have been polished politicians, but they still weren't down the grassroots for
mm-hmm. Now, it sounds like this, did this occur before the build-up for Korea? It must have been.
I think,
before
that, uh-huh,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
uh-huh,
before that, uh-huh.
So about 50 years.
Yeah, about 50, uh-huh,
mm-hmm.
yes, about 50.
And at that point, the bargaining committee was basically both the negotiating and, grievance committee.
Correct.
When you first began.
One and the same. Grievance and negotiating.
Now, at that point, were you in fact negotiating contract, or was your contract still in effect?
In 50? You mean when I was on the committee?
Before the strike.
Oh.
When you were on the committee.
Okay. When I was on the committee. Let's see, I forget the first year. Yeah, okay. That was the first year I was on the committee or not. I can't remember exactly. I think that, can't remember, 49, 50, 51. It could have been the second, my second term in the committee. I'm not real sure. But anyway, I was on the committee, and I was secretary of the committee when we went on strike in 51. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was, negotiating.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes.
But up until then, there really was nothing to negotiate until
the contract terminates. That's correct.
Yeah.
But you see, your contract's jury. At that time, I think we had a 45-day clause in our contract where we could start open negotiations 45 days prior. I think, let's see, was it 45? Could have been, God, could have been 60 days. I can't remember because it changed, you know.
So that must mean that most of your work was the grievance work.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'd say out of a two-year period, I'd say that 6 months of it was negotiations. Yeah. The rest of it was all grievances, arbitration
now,
grievances.
How much time, once you were on the bargaining committee, before the temporary, first you had temporary leave, and then another leave, how much time would you be spending on the committee and away from the shop floor?
Before they put the leaves in? Oh, my Lord, I'd put in 6 to 8 hours, about 3 days a week.
So you were less and less on
grievance
the shop
hearings,
floor.
Grievance hearings.
So you were probably spending
And then, in the interim, you still were on call. You know, if a chief steward called you, you would have to go out on that call. And it could have been he had a grievance filed, you know, getting ready for the hearing, and he had to have a little preparation or whatever, a little more investigation, or it could have already been heard and have to go out and do some investigating. So
it sounds like there was more time in union business, basically, than it was in shop floor work.
Right. Right.
Now, Betty, I think probably a good stopping place is before we get to the strike, but I'm wondering, before we stop, because that will give you a couple minutes to get yourself together.
Okay.
And
thank you.
I think, you know, not then starting fresh with the end of the contract and the beginning of negotiations and the strike next time. But I'm wondering, do you recall the build-up, as the build-up was occurring before the strike, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
Can you describe what was going on with the build-up?
Yes, there was a great deal of preparation. There was a great deal of preparation and planning to the point that I was also a chairman of the Community Services Committee at that time, and we were preparing for committees to be set up once we hit the bricks, if we did hit the bricks. Now, at that time, we did not have any strike fund. There wasn't any strike fund. However, just prior to 51, I was the chairman of a delegation at the UAW Constitutional Convention, and I was able to hit the floor and put a motion on the floor that should we go on strike, that the UAW would assist us financially.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't spelled out just how or whatever, but anyway, I did get that vote. So we had that, okay?
Yeah.
But there was the UAW didn't have any sort of a program. They didn't have any department whatsoever for strike assistance or education or anything like that. Any organizing, nothing. We did it on our own. So we got our picket banners all made up, you know, and then we decided, okay, now if we hit the bricks, now we're going to have someone take care of the, we'll have to determine how much money that each person will be paid out of our fund, you know. And for a member and his family, and then we'll have to have somebody take care of the gas and light bills that come in, and we'll have to have someone take care of the loans that come in, and someone that take care of the delinquent payments on cars, and someone take care of working with the different social agencies and that sort of thing.
And maybe we should hold off on all that, because that's really kind of building to the strike.
We really built up. You see, things were so tough in those days. I mean, we were really hurting.
Before the career rehires?
Let me see. It was, I can't remember. Gosh, if only I could just remember exactly. There's so much happened back in there that was overlapping. Can't remember if it was.
Well, why don't you think about that? Let me check. Maybe I can check some dates. Because I'm wondering, too, as what you saw happening as production goes up right around the beginning of the Korean War, and you have a lot of
rehires,
and you have, I mean, in a sense...
I think it was right after.
I would think it would be after.
Yeah, I think it was. I'm trying to remember, because I'll tell you why. I'm trying to remember. I was working in Building 12, and we already had the ships go down the line that we had refurbished, so it had to be after.
So. Do you recall, as people, what was happening with the build-up in production of... Who were the people coming in as production started to increase again? Can you describe that a little bit before we stop today?
Who were the people were coming in?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm wondering about is, did a lot of the women who had been working during the war come back during the Korea rehire period?
Yes, there were. There were people who had lost their seniority because they didn't come back, you know, within that 24 months. There were a lot of gals that came back then. And there were still, and they had them because the market was tight. So a lot of gals came back at that time. They did.
And were there also many new women coming in, or was it mainly rehires?
No, it was just mainly rehires.
Mm-hmm.
Men, and a lot of men, veterans, you know, people that, but mostly rehires. We didn't have new people, new women.
New men,
but not new women. Mostly rehires.
And the rehires would have absolutely no seniority.
No, they would not. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense of what proportion the women were as the production was increasing and there were more people brought in again during the period?
Well, I would say that I'm trying to remember because at that time, I was a lead man, a female coming into the crew too. That I would probably say that there'd be three men to every one woman, you know.
But that's still pretty high.
Yeah, it is. Uh-huh.
Compared to what? How did, do you recall the reactions of the women coming back who've been off since, or away, at least from that job since the war?
Yes, a lot of them were glad to come back. A lot of them found that they had enjoyed that type of work, you know, and it was pretty good money.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty good money compared to work on the outside, to work in the stores and that sort of thing. So a lot of them were glad to come back. A lot of them that had felt that they could use that extra money for their family, you know, their kids. And a lot of them come back just because they enjoyed the work. They didn't all necessarily need that money, but the majority of them came back because they need that extra money for their family.
Mm-hmm. Is your sense that the majority of them had been working all along?
No. Majority of them had not been working.
So after they left, they'd gone home?
Right. Had gone home and, you know, had not worked. But then when they got the job offer sent out to them, they came in.
Mm-hmm.
And see, when they came in, you know, at the low level, not what they left, you know, low level, B.
Do you recall any of the women who came, you say, 3-1, so on your crew,
there'd
be about 5 women in your when you were lead there? In your department?
I say so.
Do you recall?
It would fluctuate.
Do you recall any of those women and what their experience had been in that period between the war and then?
Most of them just had not worked. They had not worked. Most of the gals that I had, there was just those few that told you that came back, you know, within that 24-month period, you know. And I don't recall that whether they had worked or not, you know. But they were ready to come back, and they wanted that job. Well, the other gals that came back in 50, 51, and they had a hard time making up their mind whether they wanted to work again, but I think it was because of financial, the need at home, that they decided to come back on a job offer.
Why don't we stop there and the next time begin with the strike?
And you see, I was going to say, now some of the gals that did come back that had been working, they came back to Douglas because even at the lower paid, the B, they were still making more money on jobs than what they had outside. And I don't recall of any gal coming back, the second wave that came back, we had any problems with disqualifying them or not that many, you know, or should I say qualifying. Because they were all mechanically inclined, and they, you know, no problem at all. And I think that's why the company, you know, they were able to hire, you know, anybody that wanted to off the street. And in many cases, the supervisors, you know, would get in touch with some of their old employees, or the employees would get in touch with their old supervisors, and they knew who were good workers and that sort of thing. So, you know, they would pick and choose, too.
was, because earlier in the first recall, you talked about there being hostility towards the few women who were recalled.
Yeah.
Was that true during the career rehires?
No. No. There were more jobs that not in 46 and 7. They're really tough. No, there were more jobs that opened up, quite a few jobs. In fact, they had a hard time filling all of them with men. That's why they hired the women, because they couldn't get the men, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
So, I'd like you to think a little bit more about that, and maybe next time if there's anything else you have to add on that, about the rehire.